Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, you can actually watch us do the show, me and Anya, every day, Monday through Thursday, live 6 to 7 on what? I think YouTube and Facebook. Super fun. I mean, why just listen when you can watch along? You can see all my crazy faces and the fact that I can't keep my hands from moving basically the entire time. You can also always join the conversation, 844-967-2789. I wanted to kind of just jump right into it because we didn't get to it last week. I had promised you on Thursday that I would talk about the charges that some of the great analysis coming out of Rolling Stone magazine, which I think is really interesting. They've basically been scooping WAPO and the New York Times a bit. They must have a very good source, but Rolling Stone really leading mainstream media coverage of the upcoming Trump indictment. Yeah, folks, it's not an if, it's just a but when. And one of the things that I wanted to bring together on this show, so I'm not going to bury the lead at all. I'm going to tell you where I'm going to take you today, because I think it's important to put all of these pieces together. And to me, what this indictment is going to show, at least what we think we know about at least three charges, and I'm going to detail those today. I'm going to give you the exact U.S. code citations. I'm going to give you the language that I think Trump is going to be charged under. I'm going to tell you about a bit of the proof. But what all of those charges amount to in their sum total is not just an attack on democracy. It is a planned attack on democracy that culminated in a mob, culminated in a violent insurrection. But the planned attack on democracy is pretty clear, out wide in the open. And the GOP has been telling us what it is for years. And that is a systematic plan to disenfranchise Black and Brown voters. That is the plan. And this news cycle, I think, over this past weekend, and I hate to not be with you when things like this are happening, but it does give me a moment to reflect, to try to bring these things together. We heard all of this uproar about this Jason Aldean song. And when I heard about all of this, I said, I am not going to talk about this on the radio. I don't want to give this guy any more airtime. But the attack on democracy is a systematic, coordinated, way out in public effort to disenfranchise Black and Brown voters under Trump that led up to the January 6th attacks. It was very particular. And in fact, he's being charged under laws that came about in the 1960s to protect Black folks from the violent efforts of the KKK and other alike organizations to systematically disenfranchise Black and Brown folks, except this time the threat is coming from a mainstream political party, not people in hoods. They might as well put them on. So what's going on with the Trump indictment and what those charges amount to is exactly that. A systematic attack on the voting rights of Black and Brown folks. And it intersects with and echoes through the efforts of the GOP over the last 20 years to undo the movement, the progress enshrined in the Voting Rights Act, to create a false boogeyman, a voter fraud, a problem that did not exist in any kind of systemized or scale fashion so as to ever draw into question a single election's outcome. And then this new, virulent, not new, but newly revisited, newly reinvigorated, out in the open embrace of violence towards Black communities, Black people, folks that are speaking out about police reform. That is what Mr. Aldean put into image. It is the combination of the song with the video that is the problem, and it belies the real threat to Black Americans' franchise, their voting rights today, as well as their physical safety every day in this country, being then doubled down by Ron DeSantis denying the realities of slavery and calling it education. These things all are of one. They're not disparate events. So let us begin. If you want to join the conversation, you want to take issue, you want to agree, add context, some historical facts, you are always welcome here. 844-967-2789. So we found out last week, because Trump told us, that he had gotten a target letter, which says basically you're about to be indicted by the federal government. Would you like to come tell the grand jury your side of the story? Those typically happen close to the end of an investigation. Here's what DOJ guidance says about target letters. This is chapter 9, section 11, procedure 153, notification of targets. When a target is not called to testify pursuant to JM 911-150 and does not request to testify in his or her own motion, the prosecutor in appropriate cases is encouraged to notify such person a reasonable time before seeking an indictment in order to afford him or her an opportunity to testify before the grand jury, subject to the conditions set forth in Justice Memo 911-152. Notification would not be appropriate in routine, clear cases or when such action might jeopardize the investigation or prosecution because of the likelihood of flight, destruction, or fabrication of evidence, endangerment of other witnesses, undue delay, or otherwise would be inconsistent with the ends of justice. So that's the target letter. I thought I would give you the technical memorandum from the Justice Department. So Trump told us, yep, that's what's happening. I just want to use some of his language. Here's what Trump was saying last week, quote, nothing like this has ever happened in our country before or even close, to which I would say, indeed, sir, we've not yet had one of you. He went on to call Jack Smith deranged and called Attorney General Merrick Garland's actions unethical. He declined the invitation to appear. And so I want to remind us briefly of some of the folks who have been called to testify before the grand jury. And just before I got on the air, I saw a story that was just picked up that a guy who used to be the New York City police commissioner, who was working on behalf of Giuliani investigating the 2020 election. Yeah, apparently he just agreed to turn over all of his documents to Jack Smith. So that's going to be interesting. And it points to the fact that, and I'm going to go through some of the folks that we know have actually testified before the grand jury, and then I'm going to get into the exact charges. And I want you to keep in mind those that have testified and the evidence, like this guy's documents that we just found out that Jack Smith has. Because what's interesting and what the story that broke today about the New York police commissioner who was working for Giuliani and finally turned all of his documents over to Jack Smith about his investigation into these claims of voter fraud in the 2020 election, of course he didn't find any, is that we didn't know about that until today. My suggestion to you is that we know a small scintilla, a fraction of those that have testified and the type of documentary evidence that Jack Smith has. So when this guy's testimony before the grand jury became public, this I put out on basically every social media platform I could, because I said, this is a BFD. And that was Jared Kushner, Donald Trump's son-in-law, being called to testify. And the interesting thing here, folks, was he was one of the last witnesses before it became public that Trump had gotten the target letter. Not unusual. You usually save the big for, you know, the big bang for the last thing for the grand jury. And this was a guy that was in the room. So Jared Kushner raising his hand and swearing an oath to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help me God, under penalty of perjury. And oh yes, by the way, have you noticed that you're not seeing or hearing a lot from Ivanka these days? Might be creating a little bit of distance between themselves and Mr. Donald Trump. So Jared Kushner, huge one. Hope Hicks went before the grand jury. Former, basically what you call an elbow aide, someone that's very close to the president. Some of the questions that have been asked were whether Donald Trump was told he lost the election. Obviously. Because if he knew he lost, well then, the panoply of crimes with which he can be charged expands exponentially. A spokesman for Jared Kushner, who served as a senior advisor to Trump during his presidency, declined to comment after it became public that Kushner had testified. I find that interesting. I mean, you either did or didn't. But again, this points to the fact that Jared and Ivanka are, again, taking some distance. You wonder, was she compelled to testify before the grand jury? Because she would sort of consider the DJT the Donald Trump whisperer, if you will. Mark Meadows also testified before the grand jury. Fascinating. Pat Cipollone, one of his lawyers. Alyssa Farah Griffith, a former Trump White House communications director. Goes on and on. Georgia's Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, late in June, testified before the grand jury. Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson and Arizona GOP official Rusty Bowers. Okay. So let's turn to the crimes themselves. We're going to go through those in detail when we come back. And I'm going to tell you not just what the charges are, but I think why some of those witnesses are so key to Jack Smith putting together an airtight case against Donald Trump. I'm Maggie Dawn. If you are on the line, please stay there. If you'd like to join us, 844-967-2789. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join our conversation this afternoon, 844-967-2789. So I'm going to go through what I think is going to be in the Trump indictment. This is largely based on Rolling Stone reporting, as well as some of the wonk blogs that I like to read. But before I get there, I wanted to remind everyone, if you live in Milwaukee County, please call your county board supervisor and let them know what you think about the upcoming sales tax vote. This is going down on Thursday, this Thursday, July 27th. Milwaukee County will decide whether or not we want to start shuttering our doors and boxing up our stuff and going home, or actually continuing to function as a government. So please do not forget to do that. A programming related note. On Thursday, I'm really excited to announce that I'm going to be joined by the City of Milwaukee's comptroller. Their chief fiscal officer, Aicha Sawa, is going to be joining me in the WAUK studio to talk sales tax, pension, and a few other things. Don't worry, I'll try to make it sexy and interesting. challenging though that may be about that subject matter. So mark your calendars. I think that's a really important moment to observe. We're going to have the top fiscal officer for the City of Milwaukee here to talk with us about it. I also wanted to do a little tease. Hopefully tomorrow, I am going to be joined again by our friend Erica Payne of the Patriotic Millionaires talking about the Great Economy Project and what they've got going on in Richland Center. Their next set of programming is about to be announced, and they wanted to share that. No better place to do it than right here on the Maggie Dawn Show. So stay tuned for that either tomorrow or Wednesday. And again, Comptroller Aicha Sawa of the City of Milwaukee on Thursday. So let's go through what at least the experts in Rolling Stone and from some of the other legal blogs are saying are the three charges that they're pretty sure are in the indictment. So first, let's just observe this. Donald Trump is right to say that never before has any president, former president, been charged with anything like this. The national security documents case and the payoffs case out of New York aren't quite at this level. So yes, it is historic. And yet, I don't think we've quite seen anything like the display that Donald Trump has been over the last 5 years in terms of U.S. democracy. The first charge that we're fairly certain is going to be part of the indictment, not in any particular order here, comes under 18 U.S.C. Section 371. It's conspiracy to commit offense or to defraud the United States, and it reads, it's pretty simple, if two or more persons conspire to either commit any offense against the United States or to defraud the United States or any agency thereof in any manner or for any purpose, and one or more of such persons do any act to affect the object of the conspiracy, each shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 5 years or both. So this is just like almost all common or statutory conspiracy charges. You have to have an agreement to do a thing, and then you have to take a step in furtherance of the thing that you agreed to do. This is really interesting because it has nothing to do with the First Amendment, right? That is anticipated to be the core of at least one of Donald Trump's defenses. Listen, I can't be criminally liable for this because all of these things are protected under the First Amendment. It doesn't matter under this statute. It has nothing to do with the First Amendment. And so there's basically three things that I think prove this up pretty convincingly. And the first one is the legal easy one, which is the Eastman coup plan, the fake elector scheme, which was that then Mike Pence would basically have some reason to declare unilaterally that the electoral counts in the swing states were in doubt. He was setting them aside. He was acknowledging these electors and then basically announcing that Donald Trump had won re-election. These were these fraudulent electoral certificates that were getting passed around. Yes, I'm talking about you, Senator Ron Johnson. That's what this is about. And this is going to be pretty well documented on paper. That's going to be a documentary sort of thing as well, then supported by testimony of the other legal experts who are telling Donald Trump that that's all hogwash and not a thing. The other two things that I think go to prove this is the big lie. Then knowing that he's lost, going out there and repeatedly saying over and over and over again that he had won the election and that the results had been somehow tampered with. And then thirdly, raising money off of this. That's fraud. I think that could potentially fall under this crime. That proof is basically every time any one of his surrogates got on Fox News, OAN, or Newsmax and talked about this garbage. And then all the solicitation emails that went out. Pretty cut and dry. Charge number two is under 18 U.S.C. section 1512C sub 2, which the title of this is tampering with a witness, victim, or an informant. Now, that could be a separate charge, but one of the subcategories of that is obstructing an official proceeding or obstructing Congress. This was sort of a lead headline, of course, from the January 6th committee. So I'm going to break that one down. And this third charge that's been a little bit harder to pin down. As soon as we get back, I'm going to take a couple calls. 844-967-2789. Keep it locked. We're breaking down the indictment before the thing even drops right here on the Maggie Dawn Show, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. Thanks always and ever to Anya for helping me out in the booth, sporting the fresh haircut, which you too could check out if you were watching us live on our Facebook stream. And you're always welcome to join the conversation, 844-967-2789. I just was going through the three things that Donald Trump is nearly certain to be charged with, and Jack Smith finally drops the indictment, which we all know is coming. The first one was conspiracy to defraud the United States, 18 U.S.C. Section 371. The next one is basically obstructing an official proceeding or obstructing Congress under 18 U.S.C. 1512 sub C sub 2. And it reads, whoever corruptly obstructs, influences, or impedes any official proceeding or attempts to do so shall be fined under this title or imprisoned by not more than 20 years or both. Please don't everyone start calling and asking me if Donald Trump is going to prison for 20 years. He's not. The sentence, even if he was convicted of that, the sentencing guidelines would bring that down considerably. But this one's pretty clear, isn't it? The one person who probably had the power to prevent this from happening, or when it was happening and started to happen, stop it, was Donald Trump. And there's not a question that it impeded an official proceeding. They stopped the proceedings. It's just that simple. The 187 minutes of watching television, watching live Fox News coverage of an official proceeding being impeded, we know about. He didn't do anything. He sat in the dining room next to the Oval and called Rudy Giuliani and God knows who else. And you want to talk about evidence of intent? How about the fact that magically the presidential phone log and diary during that period of time are mysteriously blank? How about the fact that they told the White House photographer, the official presidential photographer, to go buzz off for a while? I mean, come on. It's like a guy who told his buddies, let's go rob this bank. Please go stand by and be ready or whatever he said. And they go rob the bank and he's watching them rob the bank. Yeah, he conspired to do that. He obstructed a proceeding. And this is a crime that he will be guilty of even if he didn't stop it. In other words, the very act of him standing by and doing nothing to prevent this from happening will also seal his doom here. And I suggest that everyone, there's lots of coverage out there, and I've printed it out and I've dissected it, and maybe one show will spend the entire show going through the timeline because it's that freaking important. But in the days leading up to this, someone in the chain of command, don't know who, basically said to the National Guard and various elements of the coordination system between the Capitol Police and the DC Police and the Secret Service and the National Guard that they basically couldn't amass and get ready. When reports started to come in that there were armed people and that the number wasn't 10 or 15,000, but oh my gosh, it's 30,000 and now more and more. Someone somewhere, I don't know, in the chain of command, you know, kept help from arriving for a while. I wonder, who could that possibly have been? I do not know. Perhaps Jack Smith does. Or perhaps our friend Mark from the SAC does. Mark, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you, my friend?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. And a lot of this stuff started well before the election had even happened, I think, that they had, you know, plans in place to, you know, that because Trump was saying before the election even happened, says, well, if I lose, it's because of fraud. I mean, so he had his followers, you know, primed up to do a lot of this stuff. And doing a little research, you know, on my own just to see that, just to confirm in my own mind that the fake electors thing was not only a violation of federal law, under fraud. It was also a violation of state law under, I think it's 775 of Wisconsin statutes under voting law, that it's the state law has to follow the federal constitution and federal laws when it comes to, you know, presidential elections. So the whole fake electors thing is another thing. It's just a complete fraud, complete violation of anybody who participated in that, their oath of office that they ever took, if they ever took one. And it is just as sad that this is going on like this, and it continues to go on like this. And I've had about a belly full of CJ accusing the people on civic media of lying all the time. And when Trump has done nothing but lying, from my perspective, pretty much I've got all the civic media has been the unvarnished truth, which apparently is too tough for some people to hear. I mean, the unvarnished truth is Trump has been a criminal for his entire adult life,
right.
and he's finally being called to account for it. I mean, that the man has cheated his entire life and expects nothing to happen to him. I mean,
he basically always made it too expensive for people to hold him accountable in his civil lawsuits, right? It took him basically rising to the highest office in our country and committing the most unconscionable of crimes to finally get the entirety of the apparatus of the federal judicial system and law enforcement apparatus to finally hold this guy accountable.
Right.
Well, as always, Mark, I appreciate your calls. I appreciate you listening. Thanks for the encouragement. Listen, at some point in time, the American public is being asked to not believe what is so plainly before its own eyes. These bits of evidence and things that I'm talking about, it's not because I said that they happened. There is going to be testimony, text messages, audio recordings of exactly when these things occurred. And they all point inexorably, unquestionably, to one outcome. By the way, it was on September 29th that Donald Trump, during a presidential debate, told members of the Proud Boys to stand back and stand by. On October 31st, Steve Bannon, on tape, explain to associates that Trump has a, quote, strategy. Here's the full quote. What Trump's going to do is just declare victory, right? He's going to declare victory, but that doesn't mean he's a winner. He's just going to say he's a winner, end quote. That's Steve Bannon on October 31st. Yeah, it's a freaking conspiracy. And the timeline deeply matters here. It deeply matters. The fact that his attorney general, who had up until that point been Trump's lackey, was unequivocally saying on the news that Trump did not win, that anybody who's claiming that is full of it, and 2 weeks later, he was out of a job. Trump knew. Jared Kushner and Ivanka and Mark Meadows were in the dining room with him during that 187 minutes. I wonder what Jared Kushner was asked before the grand jury. It's his son-in-law. One of the interesting things here is that the prosecution will have to prove Donald Trump's intent. And the federal jury instruction here is pretty intuitive. We can't read someone's mind, but we can use our own common experience and our own common sense and make inferences based on the facts and circumstances that surrounds that person's decision-making during the time in question. I ask you, if these things are facts and they will be proven to be facts, how can you make an argument that he did not do these things? You can say to me, Maggie, I'll admit of the fact that he did them, but I do not think that punishment or prosecution is in the best interest of the country. You can say that. At least that argument has a tether to reality. It is laughably stupid, naive, biased, and generally effed up beyond all recognition. But it's an argument that at least has some factual reality and integrity for that reason. Might I remind you what Kevin McCarthy said in the days after January 6th, the president bears responsibility. He should have immediately denounced the mob and sent them home. We will hold those responsible accountable. Now he cannot attach his lips to Donald Trump's butt with any more deliberateness or daily genuflection. Have you no shame, sir? All right, the third charge. Now, this was the interesting bit here because Rolling Stone reported it first as deprivation of rights under the color of the law. That's 18 U.S. Code 242, came out of the Civil War. It was then enforced really for the first time in the 60s, as I noted before. But the New York Times came back on Friday and corrected that and said that they believe that the charge is under 18 U.S.C. Section 241, a statute entitled Conspiracy Against Rights. It reads thusly, if two or more persons conspire to injure, oppress, threaten, or intimidate any person in any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, district, in the free exercise or enjoyment of any right or privilege by the Constitution or laws of the United States, or because of his having so exercised the same, they shall be fined under this title or imprisoned for not more than 10 years or both. These sections of the U.S. Code were enacted in the wake of the Civil War to protect Black folks from having their voting and other legal rights stripped away. And it has been used over the decades, specifically Section 241, to protect citizens against voting fraud conspiracies. Anybody? Anybody? So we've got our good friend CJ on the line, and I'm going to ask him just a place-setting question, which is this, CJ. I would like to know, do you think Donald Trump should have done more on January 6th to stop the violence that day?
I think if the January 6th committee was honest, they would have allowed questioning exactly what happened, because Nancy Pelosi was allowed to have the National Guard 2 days before that. And who's in control of
that's
security?
False. That's untrue.
Capital.
That is untrue,
it
sir.
It is.
Yes, it is. Factual. Okay. So I want to ask you the question that I started with. Can you please, I know that you have a point that you want to make, CJ, but I want us to at least find some common footing, and then I'll allow you to make your point, but I at least want us to find one place of agreement. I think Donald Trump should have done more earlier that day, regardless of what Nancy Pelosi should or should not have done. When he saw what was happening on the TV, sir, should he have acted more quickly and more clearly to stop the violence that day?
Is my mic on now?
Should he have acted more quickly to stop the violence that day?
January 6th, supposedly they laid that all out, Maggie. And, you know, they didn't play the part where he, you know, they didn't play the part of his speech where he said, go peacefully.
We waited over 3 hours, CJ. My question to you is about those 3 hours. Should he have acted more quickly? Should he have come out sooner? When he saw Capitol Police officers being attacked by people wearing Donald Trump hats, should he have acted sooner?
You know, I thought the January 6th and Mueller and, you know, all that was solved. You know, that's the mere fact that they gave minutes of testimony and video evidence, and the proof be told, there was 33,000 hours that they was released, because most people in there were taking selfies with the statues.
Okay. We got to go to break. I got 10 seconds. I'm sorry. I had to cut you off. I couldn't make heads or tails of what you were saying, though. I'll be back with more in a minute. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show.
Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Network. I was having a fun tangle with CJ before the break, and he mentioned that Nancy Pelosi had all the National Guard troops that she could handle on January 6th. Here are some facts. On December 31st, District of Columbia Mayor Muriel Bowser requests a limited National Guard deployment as downtown merchants begin to board up their businesses. On January 3rd, U.S. Capitol Police Deputy Chief Gallagher replies to the Department of Defense via text message that request for National Guard support is not forthcoming at this time. That's January 3rd. On that same day, Trump announces that he will be at the Ellipse rally and then orders recently appointed Secretary of Defense Christopher Miller to, quote, do whatever was necessary to protect the demonstrators on January 6th. On January 4th, U.S. Capitol Police Chief of Police Sund asked Senate Sergeant at Arms and House Sergeant at Arms for authority to have National Guard assist. Request denied, CJ. Secretary of Defense Miller issued orders on January 4th prohibiting the deployment of D.C. National Guard members with weapons, helmets, body armor, or riot control agents without his personal approval. On January 5th, D.C. National Guard commanding Major General William J. Walker receives new orders from Secretary of the Army Ryan McCarthy, stating that he must seek approval from McCarthy and Defense Secretary Miller before preparing to respond to any civil disturbance. Previously, D.C. National Guard commanding Major General William J. Walker had unilateral authority to respond without first seeking permission. Yes or no? It is not true that Nancy Pelosi had all the National Guard she wanted. Jean from Eau Claire, it's the Maggie Dawn Show. Welcome.
Thank you so much for covering this. This is just outstanding show. Thank you so much. CJ, wake up. We're not idiots. I watched live that day. I saw what happened at that Capitol. I was outraged, sickened. I cried. I never seen anything like it. Oh, if they're just taking pictures and posing by, he's living in la-la land and he needs to wake up. Because America, you can still see all these things that happen. You can go to PBS. They have all the hearings. You can see the evidence with your own eyes and the text back and forth and people begging him to do something Trump. And it's just, I mean, anybody that thinks he's innocent, really, I don't know. I think they need their head examined. Thank you very much for the work you do. Outstanding choice, usual. Thank you, Maggie.
Thank you, Jean. And I have this to say, if there was so much, like, nothing to see here, what happened to the Secret Service text messages from January 5th and 6th? Like, why did those go missing? Why is the presidential diary blank? Why is the president's call log blank? Why was the president's official photographer kicked out of the White House? On and on and on. Just use your common sense, everybody. Rico, my man, what's up? You're on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Hey, how you doing, Maggie? I just wanted to thank you for everything you do and all the fine hosts, all the fine shows, Civic Media, the information, the truth you bring us. And the reason I say that is you're what we got right here in Wisconsin. And I think in the end here, ultimately, if you think about it, it will be we, the people, who will be Trump's ultimate jury come November 2024. You can take that to the bank. We, the people, will make this case. I can't say it enough.
I love it, Rico, from your lips to everybody's ears here on the Civic Media Radio Network. CJ, I'm going to give you 1 second to respond to those facts. It was not true that the DC National Guard was available. That was false. They had been given direct orders to effectively not respond to an active request first transmitted on December 31st from Mayor Muriel Bowser. What you were saying was untrue. What is your response, sir? CJ, you're on. What's your response to the facts that I shared? Well, that's kind of what I thought. Thanks much for making my point for me. We're going to call that a mic drop here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Before we get to the end of the hour, and I didn't quite get enough time to stitch this all together for y'all like I promised I would do. But I will promise you all that when we get a conversation going, I'm not just going to move on. Because if you're interested in it, I want to be interested in it. And I want us to take a pause where we need to talk through some of this stuff. So I'll be back here tomorrow, and I will continue to tie this all together for everybody. But the last one that we were talking about, this last charge that's going to be in the indictment, was 18 U.S.C. Section 242, conspiracy against rights. This there's a couple of cases that I think are really illustrative, and one was very recent. The first one is from a while ago. It was basically a ballot box stuffing incident, and they didn't do it at enough scale to actually impact the election. This was from 1948. They still found a criminal violation of this. So even that, stuffing some ballots into a box back in the olden days when they used paper, yeah, that resulted in a criminal conviction, and folks went to prison over that. If that was good enough for those folks back then, it's not quite good enough for this guy. The other case is a really interesting one. This was about election misinformation, and this was actually a result of the 2016 election. A guy by the name of Douglas Mackey was convicted of March of this year by a federal jury for conspiracy against rights based on his efforts to deprive individuals of their right to vote. It was this guy and one of his buddies sent out these robocalls in the 2016 election that basically told Democratic voters, Anya's remembering this now, that they could like vote by text or do these other wackadoo things that weren't voting. Yeah, these guys, they got charged and convicted with this in 2016. So if it's okay for those people to go to prison over this, wouldn't it sort of require it here? I'm going to spend a little bit more time about what all that means and the very huge importance of the fact that these, particularly this crime, was one that was made part of U.S. law following the civil rights era and was used to help protect the civil liberties of Black folks back in the 60s. And all that says about the moment that we're in. Yes, Mr. Aldean, I am coming for your privileged butt. Tomorrow on the Maggie Dawn Show, tune us back in. I always want to hear from you. You can always email me here at Civic Media, maggie.dawn@civicmedia.us. Thanks, Anya. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow here on the Civic Media Radio Network.